Welcome to Invictus Games Radio. I'm PJ Kwong. The Invictus Games Toronto 2017 take place September 23rd to 30th and will harness the power of sport to inspire the recovery of wounded, ill, and injured servicemen and women. This podcast shines a light on the stories of those competing in the games and those surrounding them. Their spirit is unconquered. On today's episode, an old friend of mine and a great friend of sports in this country, a multi-Gemini Award winner for Best Sportscaster and host, interviewer host, and also a Canadian Screen Award winner. Basically, if there's an award, he has won it, as well as legions of fans for his outstanding storytelling. I am tickled because he's going to be the anchor that stabilizes the Invictus Games Toronto 2017 ship on TV's TSN and CTV. Brian Williams, with your Order of Canada, I'm going to go all fangirl on you.
Get out of here. We've known each other at figure skating for years.
That's absolutely right. Can we say figure skating here on the Invictus Games Radio podcast? I say so, right?
Of course. You say it everywhere you go.
That's true. I certainly do. So a couple of things that I drew parallels as I was sort of organizing this podcast. One is the fact that your dad was a doctor and he moved around.
Right.
Our military families move around a lot. Can you draw a little bit of a sort of a correlation between those things?
Yeah, it's not easy. My dad died May 21st in Victoria. He would have been 102 on August 30th. And I was born in Winnipeg when he was at medical school. He was a Vancouver native. We moved back to Vancouver. He interned at St. Paul's. My mother was a nurse. I went to grades 1 to 5 in Invermere, British Columbia, a little town west of Banff. Country people say, you love Johnny Cash. I said, I grew up in Invermere, and so, but then grades 6 and 7 in Connecticut, to where he went to Yale University to go into hospital management. Grade 8 in Edmonton when he ran Royal Alex. High school in Hamilton. He was medical director of St. Joe's. And then I went to university at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan when they moved to Detroit. So yes, moving around is tough. I'm an outgoing person. So, I was able to deal with it. I have two sisters, had two brothers. One was killed in a car accident. And it was harder on the girls because if you're shy when you're moving around, you're the new kid. I also had the advantage of going to Hamilton to start grade 9 and leaving after grade 13. So you go to a high school, they draw from many grade schools. But my sisters and brothers usually came in the middle of high school, the middle of junior high, the middle of grade school. So, there are many positives. I have a pretty good idea of North America with all the traveling I've done since and the world with my work. But I certainly understand. And there, as we start, there's a wonderful quote here. A soldier enlists. The family is relegated to a kind of conscription where they can only follow along without much choice. You're talking about following along. And this is why, PJ, it's so important that Michael Burns, True Patriot Love, the people involved with these games are involving the families like never before.
Mm-hmm. You are a bit of a Renaissance man. So you mentioned Johnny Cash, but you got your start in radio, student radio station, with classical music.
WXTO-FM, the center aisle of your FM dial. In Grand Rapids, Michigan, it was a campus radio station. I agreed to introduce classical music if they'd let me do play-by-play of basketball. So.
Basketball was my next question, because we've got, of course, wheelchair basketball.
Right, yeah.
Tell me what it's like. Able-bodied basketball versus wheelchair basketball. What do you like about each of them?
Well, there are so many similarities. Watching the tape of the wheelchair. I'm a basketball fan. I'm a hockey fan, being a Canadian, obviously, but I love all sports. But the similarities are interesting. We can go through some of the differences in the sports, what makes them, different, say basketball, different from the NBA. The one that really struck me is powerlifting. And we will talk about this, PTSD, the invisible illness. That means they're able-bodied. So when they're laying on their backs and lifting, if you don't have any legs, you're at a disadvantage to someone that can put his legs on the floor. Mm-hmm. So you know what they do? They tie their legs to the bench they're laying on, so everybody's competing equal. So
that's amazing.
There are many differences.
So when you think about it, after all of your years of sports coverage, what essentially is the difference between a team sport and an individual sport?
Well, it depends where it is. At the Olympics, an individual sport is part of the bigger team. You're still in a team. I can remember meeting with Pat Quinn prior to Salt Lake City. I wanted to know about the hockey program. Canada hadn't won a gold medal since 1952 in Edmonton. The Edmonton Mercurys, named after a car dealership. And this, you know, in Salt Lake City in 2002, 50 years. So I want to know about the hockey. He wanted to know about how the players should be involved. And this speaks to your question. I said, don't have them sitting in the rooms. Have them live in the village. Don't do what the basketball team did with the United States and Barcelona. Live in the village. Have them see a gold medal by Katrina LeMay-Doan. They're part of, yes, they're a hockey team, but they're also part of a big team. So, you know, individual sports, the Canadian championships, no one knows figure skating like you do. If it's the Canadian championships, you're competing basically for yourself. Mm-hmm. If you're at the World Championships, you're part of a Canadian team that there are world standings too. At the Olympics, you're part of a team. So it all depends. But, Howard Cosell, it's the same whether you're an athlete. I don't care if you're a man, a woman, a baseball player, a figure skater, a skier. Howard Cosell told me in 1976, best advice I ever got, the best ad libs are rehearsed.
Oh.
If I ever write a book, that's the name of it. I don't care if you're a doctor, a soldier, a broadcaster, a skater, a hockey player like Katrina, who's here with us in the studio. Preparation is key. There
Absolutely.
Are no shortcuts to practice and preparation. So.
And the same thing goes for Invictus Games competitors. I mean, we've got 550-plus competitors coming from 17 nations, competing in 12 adaptive sports. It feels to me, before we turned on the microphone, that the Invictus Games movement is personal for you, that you have such stock in what's going to take place. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I've worked in radio. This will be our 34th year with a young gentleman named Donald Stewart Cherry. We have a radio show,
Who's
Don
that
Cherry,
guy again?
Don Cherry's Grapevine. I was always a big supporter of the police, the fire, and the military, but there is no bigger supporter than Don. In 2007, I had the honor of going to Afghanistan with the Stanley Cup. I can remember in Kandahar, the late Bob Probert, tough guy. Mm-hmm. Tiger Williams, tough guy. 3:30 in the morning up talking to the troops. I was a supporter before I went. The way I went, we were doing Soldier On, which is involved today, but Soldier On was a program then to get men and women that had been injured into the Paralympics. So, see, TSN had this series, Spirit of the Game. Paul Harrington, my producer, and I go to Ottawa to talk to General Rick Hillier. And the first thing he says, how would you like to go to Afghanistan? And I said, I'd like to be Prime Minister, too. He says, I'm serious. So I was never in any danger. We were taken care of. But, I have three daughters. The plane up from Dubai into Kandahar, we flew over to Dubai on a Canada jet. It was about 25 players. They played road hockey. I did the emceeing. What struck me was the number of young women. And, I sat next to a young lady from Ottawa on the plane, a soldier, and she had a machine gun. And I'll never forget what she said to me. I said, why do you have that gun? And she said, if we get shot down, I'm going to defend you. And I said, oh, my God. But, that, we were well taken care of. But, I came home. Somebody made a smart aleck comment to me. They said, you went over there to support war. I said, no, I didn't. I went over there to support the men and women. They're doing what they do to make our lives a whole lot better. And I'll never forget. They left the camp at night, men, women, tanks, light armored vehicles. Then they had flatbed truck and trailers that you'd see on any highway in between Calgary and Edmonton or on the 401 in Southern Ontario. What they did was when one of the labs, light armored vehicles, went over a bomb and it penetrated it and killed soldiers, they brought that vehicle back so that the Taliban would not know where the weakness was, and then they strengthen it. But to see these, they're in the tank, and I remember a young woman waving to us at 11 o'clock at night as they're heading out into the darkness, and they had these big canisters. I thought they were gas hanging around the tank, and it was water, because at Dubai, it was like, 40 degrees, but it was so humid, all you had to do was step out the door, you were soaking. Afghanistan was very different. It was practically zero humidity. You didn't know, but it opens your eyes. I wasn't in any danger, but just to see what they went through and when they went out, and to see what it meant when hockey players spoke to them. I mean, mm-hmm. A young man from Newfoundland, I'll never forget. What really almost embarrassed me was the soldiers would come up and say, thank you. I'd say, for what? For coming. I said, well, thank you. I'm taken care of here pretty well. But it was interesting. And General Hillier, I saw General Hillier over there, and it was all very good.
You know, as Canadians, but I'm sure we're not alone, that we hold things like the Stanley Cup,
yeah.
These different kinds of physical representations of yeah. Sport and sporting events. That is exactly the same for the Invictus Games. We have medals that are going to be assigned, and although we're not keeping a medal count, the participation in sport is really important. I know that you and I talked about some research that you did prior to this podcast about the stories and the fact that I think television helps to illuminate those stories. Can you comment about some of the stories that you've discovered along the way in your preparation?
Yeah, and let me just, before I get to that, you mentioned medals.
Yes.
I love Prince Harry's quote when he says, oh, we don't keep a medal total, but you can be sure they know who's winning and who's not winning. And remember Michelle Obama and the president in that tape piece where Harry and Her Majesty the Queen are sitting in a room and he's reading about the Invictus and the Obamas call and say, we're going to really beat the Brits. And she goes, boom, Michelle Obama does. And the Queen goes, boom, oh, really? And, you know, but there are just so many stories. It's a story, do you pronounce it Gindol?
Gandol.
Gandol. This is an amazing story. He's a soldier, and his name is Joel Gandol. He has PTSD, and we'll talk about that, the invisible illness, mental problems. In fact, more than half the Canadian team, you know, people that don't know this and are listening are going to watch and see, well, they're all walking out. They look, they're able-bodied. I thought this was... you know,
like a
soldiers,
parasport,
but it's not. It's PTSD. He had PTSD. His son Zach was 6 at the time. And I guess they're watching something. I don't know, maybe it was Orlando. And there's a dog, has a big presence, comes running to meet the soldier when he drops in with the flag. And he says, what's the dog doing there? And his father said, well, they help us. They're service dogs. And there are our partners, guides, and protector on the battlefield. And this 6-year-old son looks up at the family and he says, really, service dogs? I'm going to be a service human for my father.
Isn't that awful?
I mean, my God. And I talked about Bruce Matthews. We talked about Dr. Stephen Daniel. At the CTV up front in June, where they unveil the new programs for the fall season, we had Christopher Klott, who is from near Hamilton, in a wheelchair, and Kelly Scanlon now in Milton. But what's so interesting, Kelly's parents are both Metro Toronto police officers. She has PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And the depression she went through, her family dealing with it. She is close to, if she isn't already there, to becoming a firefighter.
That's right.
With the Milton, Ontario Fire Department, which is about 30 miles west of Toronto, just off the main 401 highway to Detroit. So, I mean, the stories are just one after another. I like the story of Jody Mittick from Ottawa. He's a city councillor, lost both his legs, always had wanted to go back to Afghanistan, and he mm-hmm. couldn't because of his condition. They wouldn't send him back. So he's asked to be the ambassador for the Toronto Invictus Games. Part of his role is going back to Kabul when they lit the flame. And an Afghan, I have the name, I don't know it off my head right now, but an Afghan, I believe, general, lit it, handed it to Jody. The flame was then taken up to Landstuhl in Germany, which is the big hospital for Americans, Canadians, and this symbolizes the journey that the soldiers go on. But in Canada, and Katrina was explaining to me from the Invictus Games, I said, well, what about flags? Well, there are 32 bases in Canada, so they will visit those bases with a flag. The flame is not a journey like it is in the Olympics. It is more a symbol of the poem and from spirit of the poem, Spirit of Flanders Field. And I understand a flame will come into the Air Canada Centre that night. The roof is on. You know what's interesting? It'll be great, because I can remember in Vancouver, never forget, everyone said...
2010.
Oh, indoor, the opening ceremonies are always outdoor. I remember the closing ceremonies in Sarajevo were indoor at the rink, since blown to bits, in 1984. But what was really interesting is the Vancouver, they had the ski jumper or snowboarder come out of the top of the building into the rink.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, it's indoors at the Air Canada Center in Toronto, but it will be different than Orlando. It'll be uniquely Canadian. And I haven't seen the rundown yet. I understand I'm getting a look at it today, and we're doing this ahead of time. But I'm sure Patrick Roberge, whom I've worked with at Olympics and Paralympics, will have something unique. Rick Hansen is there. Rick Hansen's not a soldier, but Rick Hansen has a lot to do with the soldiers as a spokesperson. He's a member of Canada's Sports Hall of Fame, so he's an athlete. He speaks to the athletes. Mike Myers, the Canadian actor from Scarborough, Metro Toronto.
Also not an athlete, just saying.
Yeah, also not an athlete, but very funny. But yeah. His parents are military people.
Yes, so, absolutely.
They're just so, I can go on here. I'm just in the midst, every time I drive, I think, oh, I got to tell that story. I thought of that story.
I'm so glad that you did, because honestly, the passion is what draws people in. So when we're looking at television, if we've got viewers at home, what about seeing things on the television screen do you suppose grabs them, especially when we've got these compelling stories with these competitors?
I just think it's how unique the event is. And let's be honest, Prince Harry attracts them.
Yeah.
I mean, this event is run by Prince Harry. And I can remember when he's got a great sense of humor, as does his brother William. And I can remember interviewing the two of them in London at the London Olympics. I said to Prince William, I said, you know, royal family is a familiar phrase in Canada. We don't think family, we think royal. And his grandmother, of course, they taped that bit with Daniel Craig where they got in the helicopter and she allegedly jumped out over the stadium, a mannequin dressed as her. I said, what was it like seeing your grandmother hang out with 007? And with a straight face, he looks at me and says, oh, Harry and I weren't surprised. We were flying the helicopter. Harry attracts the interest. The fact that someone is dignified and elegant and a former president, Barack Obama, is coming. Prime Minister or President Trump's wife will lead the delegation.
From the U.S.
From the U.S. Prime Minister Trudeau will be there. Sarah McLachlan will be there. Bryan Adams will be there. Bruce Springsteen. I mean, there are just so many big names. And I think that's great, because if you're drawn in by Prince Harry, you're going to learn something you didn't know before, and the next time you'll be drawn in by the games and these athletes, and you will hear their stories. And the spirit is just amazing.
I want to know, as a commentator, so walk me through your role as a commentator. First of all, obviously you do extensive research. I've always known that about you, but tell me about that part, and then tell me about how you bring those stories to life. What is your role as a host and as a commentator?
Well, I've done 14 Olympics. So when I do an Olympic opening ceremony, and I will be doing this when I meet with Patrick Roberge here, I want to see where the PA announcer speaks. Because the worst thing is the PA announcer saying, ladies and gentlemen, Afghanistan, and I'm talking over top of it.
Yep.
So you have to pick your place. There are these stories, compelling stories. We will pick one or two soldiers, and we have to know every country. They'll pick a soldier to name. We call it a chyron. The name is written on their chest on the television screen. They can't do if there's 90 members every team. But like, it'll be interesting to say who they focus on from Iraq and Afghanistan. And then you have to say, well, there's a picture of Sergeant so and so. This person served here or there. You're there to augment what the people are seeing. What's self-evident, you don't explain. I mean, the worst thing is when an announcer says, it's a standing ovation, and I'm watching, I said, I can see that, they're standing, you know what I mean? You let the pictures tell the story, but the pictures need, you know, some points of reference for people that aren't totally familiar with this.
When you're behind a desk or somewhere on a set, what speaks to you in terms of stories? Like, why is television so important and this visual kind of medium? Why is it so important in being able to translate stories for the viewers?
I believe the Olympics are all about storytelling. The events, the athletes, when a medal is won, if it's the first ever for the country, tell the story of the person or who did it before. And listen, in this day and age with younger people, they don't read books. They read tablets, they read mm-hmm. phones. So they get their stories visually and with audio. It's very different than when I was young and everything was the written page. I just think stories are what make it interesting. And as I said to you before we went on, PJ, we will be telling stories. I mean, the opening ceremonies are on CTV the two Saturdays, 23rd and 30th, live. And TSM will have 2 hours a night. Now, we can't cover every sport, but we'll tell the stories of that particular sport. We have, for instance, of the 12 or 14 sports, depending how you count them, depending on the divisions, we have a feature that Tracy Britnell from TSN did.
I love Tracy.
Just pulling them out here. Big figure skating. Here we go again with an orange part of figure skating.
Always comes back to the sparkle.
I know. I'm just kidding. But I've got. I guess they're at home. But we. Oh, here's how to archery. We have these features you'll be seeing. Features are a story. For instance, there are two types of bow and archery. In track, they include the 100, 200, 400, and 1500 meters. Some are divided by gender, except in the case of a relay where men and women can compete together. You asked about basketball. There's a driving challenge. I look at swimming, powerlifting, indoor rowing, volleyball. This is interesting. What they do is... This is absolutely fascinating. The maximum, there must be 6 players per team. I mean, I'm going to do this carefully, so if you're listening, there are no pictures here. There are 6 players per team. Okay. The maximum number of points that can be on the court at once is 12. We're not talking about points scored. Points are awarded if you're a maximum player. That's an able-bodied, PTSD. That's one point. A moderate player, a moderate injury, that's 2 points. An open player, it's the other way around, what am I saying? An open player is 3 points. That's a person that has able-bodied PTSD. A moderate injured player is 2 points, and a player with a maximum injury, total in the wheel, I don't know what it would be,
like
is 1 point. So the maximum number of points you're going to have is 12, okay? If there are 6 players on the court, and you put 6 able-bodied players, that's 18. It doesn't work. So you've got to include players with maximum disability. I mean, I've probably confused you, but it's so interesting. And we have videos of those produced by Tracy from TSN that we'll play at night. We have features. There's one athlete that uses 3 different prosthetics. I mean, it's for depending on the different events. One has nicknames for his prosthetics. Ones he goes to parties with, ones he runs with. And so these are all features that you're going to see. Plus, we're lining up interviews. For instance, I would obviously on the Monday show, there's no Sunday, the Saturday, the 23rd, we don't have a show Sunday, Monday we come on, want to talk to somebody that was involved in the opening ceremony. And, we will see who that is after the ceremony. But obviously you're going to want to hear from well-known people that are there, athletes. It's going to be really interesting. I want to talk to many of these athletes and find out what it means to them.
Do you think that the heart of a competitor is the same regardless of the event?
That's what many of the stories I've been reading and studying, they say a competitor is a competitor, and let's not kid ourselves, a soldier, female, male, they're competitors.
They're in it to win it, my friend.
You got it, and it's the ultimate mm-hmm. competition. I don't mean that in sense of the best, but I'm talking about serious. So, these veterans, these current soldiers, they take this very, very seriously. They've been training. And what's important, I learned how they pick the teams. They don't necessarily take the best. They take those that will benefit. They take many of the best, but many that will benefit from the experience psychologically, depending on where they're at in their rehab. The doctors would say, I think this would benefit this person.
Do you want to hear a cool story that you may or may not know? But
yeah.
I'm giving this one to you because you'll love it.
Right.
Ukrainian team was named, 15 competitors.
Right.
They had twice as many athletes as they needed. So each of those competitors, instead of bringing 2 friends and family, they're each bringing one of the other team, the alternate team, right, as one of their friend and family. So they each are bringing an alternate team member and a friend and family member rather than two friends and family, which I think is one of the most generous things I've heard of.
But we got to talk, we mentioned friends and family, and I talked about families being conscripted, and yet they're not, you know, they're sort of following. Games were 2014 in London, 2016 Orlando, this year Toronto, next year Sydney, Australia, the year after back to London. You know, we should talk about that never before a family's been included. Two family members, friends are coming with them. I read a story, I don't know the soldier's name, a man, and he talked about his son seeing me in a different role than a wheelchair.
And, yes.
So there are just so many, I mean, there's so many angles. The other thing I think you have to be very careful of is not to be maudlin and not to overemphasize the injuries, not to, they don't want to be looked on as athletes with a disability or competitors. They don't call them athletes, they call them competitors. Competitors with a disability, they want them to be looked on as competitors.
And as people.
Yeah, as people. So I am very concerned. Now, I'll be working with Paul Franklin. Paul is a medic from Edmonton who's worked with Lisa LaFlamme on Remembrance Day. He's got television experience. He's brilliant. He's an advocate for the invisible illness, PTSD, and an advocate for better benefits for soldiers. He's lost both his legs above the knee. Well, when we come out, and we may come out together to open the games in the stadium, I'm not going to say, you know, lost, you know, he'll be introduced probably as a veteran of Afghanistan. People can see what happened. And, you know, it bothers me and I've done the Paralympics with my dear friend Rick Hansen. And, you know, people will say, well, what is it, tell me what it was like to be paralyzed when you fell out of that truck or something. Well, they don't want to talk about that.
No.
They don't want to talk about where they are. It's obvious what's wrong. I think we do in the opening ceremony. You ask me about where I talk, the invisible illness. As I said, people are watching this and they don't know anything about it, and they see half the Canadian team walking and looking totally, well, they are able-bodied. It's a mental condition. They're going to wonder what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So PTSD is just as serious. I talked about Kelly Scanlon. That is where I'll have to mention it. And I will quote Prince Harry from Orlando. His quotes in Orlando are just, my God, there's no shame in it. I admire the courage. He talked about a woman sitting home with postpartum blues. I mean, it's just so important. And this is interesting. Paul Harrington, my brilliant producer and researcher I've worked with at the Olympics. Think about this. Prince Harry was just so upfront about PTSD, as he should have been in Orlando. Wonderful. But is that because he was aware of his own depression and his brother's? They had just talked about it openly for the first time not that long ago about the death of their mother. So there's, I mean, those are the stories you weave in. And, you know, as I say, I'm very careful not to dwell on the disability.
When we are looking at coverage of the Invictus Games, of course, it's going to be on multi-platforms. And in this day of sound clips and of people,
right,
as you say, not necessarily reading, what kinds of lessons do you hope are going to come out for younger people as a result of the games?
Well, you know, if I say it, it sounds corny. And that's the other thing I'm concerned about. I don't want to sound dramatic. But as I read Bruce Matthews and these
another
people.
Another competitor.
Yeah.
Yep.
They talk about the message for young people is don't quit. You can be whatever you want to be. Deal with your setbacks. If I say that, it's, yeah, right. What's he doing? He's read another book. You know, when someone's sitting there that has a disability from fighting for and defending their country or doing something, you know, that is noble, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And when they speak to that, that's what it's about. And that's when you, I just want to hear the athletes. When we do the show, I'm going to ask them the question, what does this mean to you? And they will be able to tell you that. But you look at Prince Harry, he says the games are therapy. The idea is not for them to compete over and over again. Perhaps once is all they need. They want to win for their families to show they can win again. And then he talked, I mean, when he talked about the injuries, his speech, he said, "I served along soldiers from all over the world. When I traveled back from the battlefield, I began to understand the real permanent cost of war. I was on a plane carrying the body of a Danish soldier and three young Brits fighting for their lives. I served alongside soldiers from all over the world." He said, "I joined the service to be one of the guys." I mean, he can say this. However, I learned how the extraordinary is his honesty, how the extraordinary opportunities of being a prince gave me an extraordinary opportunity to help my military family. And he went to the Warrior Games, which were essentially for American soldiers, I believe, in Colorado. And that's where he said, "Wow, I'm going to create the Invictus Games to give these amazing men and women a platform. You will see things that 4 years ago were not possible." You see this quote in the ad that's running on television. You'll see men and women who, by all rights, should have been dead on the battlefield and are here competing. And he wanted to speak about an issue that is too often not discussed, and that is shrouded in shame, fear. And it's an issue that is faced not only by our servicemen and women, but for many of you watching at home, it is not just physical injuries that our soldiers deal with. Every one of them will have confronted and experienced emotional and mental issues. So those are, you know, you ask, those are the messages, but they have to be delivered by a Prince Harry or a soldier, not by Brian Williams or anyone else, any other commentator. I mean, I can quote them like I did there and give them full credit as I do. Those aren't my ideas. But what I'll try to do in the interviews is have them tell the message or give the message to young people.
You know, it's interesting because your role is vital, because as a commentator or as a host, you are in fact pointing us to these stories and helping to bring them to life. Do you, and you know, one of the things we should talk about is what we started with, which is this whole idea of team. This is a bit of a team building exercise, the Invictus Games, in the best possible way. Being one of the guys, as you just mentioned, is in fact what is so rewarding for many of these men and women. Do you feel that as well as you're bringing these stories to life?
I'm on a team. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's Jamie Bauer, Paul Harrington, Patrick Roberge, Ken Volden, you know, the head, Mark Melier, senior executive at TSN, coming to me and asking, and then we say, "All right, what are we going to do? All right, let's have this meeting. We have a meeting. All right, this is what we need." Paul will say, "All right, if our studio is at Toronto City Hall, I need faxes. I don't want to be going up to the studios in northern Toronto," for those people that aren't in the metro area and the rest of the country. They're sort of north of the city of the center. You know, then we have meetings. I'm here today to talk to Michael Burns of True Patriot Love.
Our CEO.
Yes, your CEO, the Dawes family. I believe it was Matthew was killed. Michael knew Peter Dawes, his father, went to the funeral in Kingston, Ontario. He was living in Calgary at the time, decided he would start True Patriot Love. I'm meeting with him in 2 days. I've also got a big horse race at Woodbine tomorrow. Man, it's coming out of my ears in all directions. And then I'm meeting with Patrick Roberge, the producer of the opening ceremony. And I worked with Patrick. I've worked Paralympics, Olympics, and it'll be interesting. I'll find out everything that's going to happen, look at the rundown, and then I will study. And then the rehearsal is important but it's like in school. If you study the night before, you're not going to do well in the exam.
That's true.
And these stories, I mean, I've got notes here. I'm reading them, but I mean, you've got to know where to go. I'll tell you one quick story. The importance of research. In London, the Canadian women's soccer team won the first team medal. Rowing's not considered a team sport. Okay, the first team medal at a summer game since 1936, when the Windsor AKO Fords men's team won a silver medal in basketball at the games Hitler put on in Berlin. So I remember seeing this fact about 20 years ago, and the score was something like 15-11 or something. And it was so low scoring because it was played outdoors in the rain on a converted tennis court. So I put that at the back of my head. You've got to know where to direct people. You can't have everything in your head. So in London, when the women won the medal, the first thing I did when I came back was, all right, here's an interesting story to put this in, what the Canadian women have done, to put it in perspective. And just as we were coming to air with about 30 seconds, I said, "Paul, 1936, men's basketball game. Canada wins the silver, beaten by the Americans. What was that score?" "I don't know, it was 15-11. You know, but I know where to direct them.
Yeah.
And then they come on and I say, "This is the first medal since 36. So, you know, you have to, we're preparing, and as you can look here, I'm old school. I like paper. I like
to look.
I live on my computer and I'm doing stuff, but I don't care whether it's a handout from somewhere I picked up in a store. I've got newspaper clippings out of the newspaper. There's Jody Mittick.
Yep.
Receiving. I said he received the torch from Afghan veteran Major Ahmad Shah. There's the picture. The story about Dr. Stephen Daniel becoming a doctor after paralyzed in a parachuting jump near Trenton, Ontario. It's all out in the newspapers. So you just use the internet, you use whatever you can, and I find that if I read something 2 weeks ago, you can't sit and say, oh, I know this, this, and this. But when you're sitting there at an Olympics or in the opening ceremony of the Invictus, and I see something, it'll twig. Mm-hmm. That's right. Now whisper. Find out Gandol, how do you pronounce it? Is that his name? And then I'll tell the story. So,
be a composer.
Yeah, it is a composer. You're the traffic police.
Yes, you are.
And you're the and a composer.
So, okay, two more questions and then you're out of here to go do the horse
race. Am I talking too much?
No, are you kidding? I could talk to you all day long. Mm. You know that. I want to know, from a privileged position as the host and commentator, do you ever get emotionally drawn in when you see, like, the giant hugs in teams as they've succeeded? What is that like for you as a person?
It's very emotional. I can remember being in Albertville, France in 1992. The Soviet Union had just broken up. And to see Estonia, Latvia, I'm a history major, and see these countries come in behind their own flag, or it was an Olympic flag, but it wasn't the Soviet Union. That was very moving. When you see a Canadian win a medal, you can't be a cheerleader, though.
No, of course.
I'm not part of the event. When I say you, I mean anyone. Too often hosts are, oh, we did it. Just mean you didn't do it.
Yeah, and you're reporting.
The athletes did
everybody
it.
Did.
Yeah. The athlete did it. You're not part of it. And you have to, obviously, there's a pride. The Invictus Games are different, too, because the stories are so incredible compared to Olympic athletes. I mean, Olympic athletes have great stories, but they haven't been risking their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, I try to be very positive with the Olympic athletes, but I also try to be realistic. If an athlete, a Canadian athlete, does something that maybe causes another athlete to fall or something, I say you got to look at it from the Russian perspective or the American perspective. People knock the United States for focusing on Americans. Well, when you win most of the medals, I mean, in Vancouver, Canada won the most gold medals ever at the Winter Olympics, capped by that Sidney Crosby overtime goal against the United States. You always have to temper your enthusiasm. You can be excited and proud, but people don't want a cheerleader. They want an honest answer. I can remember 1988 when Ben Johnson tested positive, and they knew they were going to be testing. And I said, "How can the people around him be so stupid?"
Mm-hmm.
One of the papers said, "Where?" I try to put myself in the mind of the viewer and see what they would want to hear, and realize that hopefully if we do interviews, there's a soldier from Newfoundland. Both our soldiers, Mayu and Natasha Dupuis. Are the captains from Quebec. But this is taking place in Toronto, but you just don't want it to be a Toronto story. As someone born in Winnipeg and lived in Invermere, B.C., in Edmonton, I'm well aware of Toronto-centric. This country extends beyond Mississauga, Ontario, to the west, and beyond Oshawa in the east, out to Newfoundland. So this is a Canadian event. It's not a Toronto event. In fact, it is not a Canadian event. It's a world event.
Yes, it is.
And we are... What I'm trying to remember is that there are athletes from 17 countries. You talked about the Ukraine. Ukraine, one of two new countries here. There were 15 countries in Orlando.
Romania is the other one.
Romania is the other one.
They're all very excited, especially the Ukrainian-Canadian community here in Toronto. They cannot wait. They have so many things planned for their team. It is truly inspirational to see what that means.
But this is different. This is different. I mean, as I say, we're privileged to work 14 Olympics, Commonwealth Games, Pan American, hockey, baseball, whatever, skiing, car racing.
Horse racing.
Figure skating.
Yeah. Woo-hoo! And, thank you.
We'll be in Regina for Skate Canada,
me
then
too.
In the Canadian Championships at the Thunderbird Arena at the University of British Columbia to select the team for the Olympics in Pyeongchang.
Bless your heart.
Provided the guy in the north doesn't blow Pyeongchang off the face of the earth, but I don't think that's going to happen. But you know, this is a world event. It's growing, but you know, and I think. I just admire Prince Harry for what he's done. He's used his What did he say? I couldn't believe it when he said that. I'm granted extraordinary powers and privileges as a prince. I'm trying to take those privileges and power and do something positive and good for my military. He calls them teammates from all countries.
And you know what? The number of competitors with whom I've spoken who've met him said that he could not have been more one of the guys like. Whether they were men or women,
great.
He was wonderful. The way his rapport, his understanding, his support of them is just second to none.
His brother's like that. William's tall, thin, taller, and very, very cerebral. Harry's a big guy. He looks like he could be a running back in football or a rugby player. not quite as tall, but very down to earth, very respectful, and good for him.
Last question. You get the last word. Any message for all those competitors, friends and family, dignitaries, everybody coming to Toronto, what would you like to say to them?
You're coming to a great country and a great city. Enjoy it. The United Nations says this is the most multicultural city in the world. This is what will make it special. You talked about the Ukrainian community, the Estonian community, the Afghan community.
Yep.
They're all going to come out great pride. And I will say this, the final word. They march in alphabetical order, except the host country comes last. So Canada's last. You know what the two countries in front of Canada are? They begin with U. United Kingdom and the United States. I mean, the Air Canada Center is going to be rocking in the closing with...
And Ukraine just before them.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. The Ukraine here along with Romania, one of the two new countries.
We better make sure that roof is bolted down because it's going to be blown off.
Yeah, it doesn't...
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's not a convertible, is it?
I know, but it might be with the amount of noise that we're expecting. Brian Williams, thank you for taking the time out of your day to talk to me. You are the best.
No, this lady that did the interview is at all major figure skating competitions. You're so respected. And I know this is a mutual sort of fan gathering, but I've known you for many years. It's an absolute pleasure. And thank you for doing this.
Okay, Brian, we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Invictus Games Radio. For more information, visit www.invictusgames2017.com.